Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 308.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we tip our hats to the Queen of England, who just celebrated her platinum jubilee, or as it is being referred to as the platy jubes, which also sounds like a foot condition. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I don't need a platinum jubilee to have a foot condition. Today, we're going to do some political check-ins on committee hearings and primary races. We're going to finally weigh in on the celebrity case that's rocked the nation, and we'll look at a curious case at Google. Today, oh my God, I'm so excited by today's panel. Both veterans of the show. You can actually read a very recent essay about her work in Lilith Magazine. She's an artist. She's a filmmaker. She's a fabulous dresser and a genius talker and so many great things. It is the wonderful Danielle Dirtschlag. Hey, Danielle.
Hey, Nagin. Thanks so much for having me. I wish I was wearing something more exciting after that intro.
No, but you always do. And then also joining us for the umpteenth time on the show today, you love her. She's the host of the War Report, a podcast that everybody should be listening to. She is a New York-based comedian that has been just titillating audiences all around the city and the country. It is the one and only Shalewa Sharp. Hey, Shalewa.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
All right, well, let us get right into it with topic number one. So the January 6th committee is finally going to public hearing it up. And from what I understand, they're planning a media-friendly affair starting on Thursday. They're actually bringing people in to produce something that might look like entertainment. My question is, you know, they're like also like, maybe overpromising the many things that are going to come out of this hearing, or maybe they're accurate promising, unclear. But my question for you first is, do you plan on watching? Like, is this something that's even come across your radar before I force you to think about it?
I don't know. I mean, I just finished watching like a Real World reunion show. And so those are the kind of production values that I'm looking for now.
Right.
If it's going to be put together in like a slightly slower Gen X to the extreme music and quick cuts kind of way. Yeah.
I think the MTV aesthetic is what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think I have the
90s
space.
MTV aesthetic.
Yes, I have the space for that.
I will say
if it cuts to a talking head of Liz Cheney in a small closet describing how she's feeling about everybody, that would make me more likely to watch. Yeah. If it's more of like a real world format, you know, I'm probably going to watch parts of it through my fingers. Chances are.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading yesterday that shock and alarm, but it's true. Fox News is not going to be broadcasting it. Mm. So, you know, my fantasy.
So shocking.
Yeah. Everyone's shocked. My fantasy for these hearings is that they'll have a kind of collective power where all of the nation understands the same information in the same way. That isn't true, right? That won't happen. So, for people like us, you know, we know how it ends. I know the ending. It's bad, which is that this happened and Trump created it. Whether or not it can move the needle nationally with people who don't agree with me, if Fox News isn't showing it, that seems pretty dubious. So I wish I felt more optimistic about the outcome. I'd be more likely to watch the whole thing, I suspect.
Two things about that. First of all, I knew that in the movie 127 Hours, dude was going to have to saw off his own arm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And yet I thought that the journey was very stressful and thrilling, even though I knew it was coming. And so there is something of the what are the circumstances in which the arm gets sawed, you know?
Right.
Now,
you're saying can James Franco be in the mix? Is that what I'm hearing you
suggesting? That's my first question.
Okay, great.
And then my next thought is, you know, on the Fox News front, it's such an interesting phenomenon about the difference between conservatives and liberals, because liberals do hate watch stuff.
Right.
Like, you know, everything, like, that's why Trump rallies were broadcast on, like, MSNBC. You know what I mean? Because liberals are like, yeah, what is this horrible dude? Like, let's hear what he has to say. But the opposite tends not to be true. I even think that's backed up by data or something. Like, I remember looking at something. I mean, also don't quote me because I don't remember. But there's something I vaguely remember seeing some data on this that, like, that conservatives don't have the same kind of like hate watching relationship. Not that January 6th should be bipartisan, like should be partisan, right?
Right.
It shouldn't.
Right.
It's just a thing that happened that sucked, and we should all be able to agree that it sucked.
But we don't.
And that there was loss of life, and that sucked, you know. And I think in some corners, really, we all do agree with, you know, if you were to sit a conservative down, even someone who's really into the big lie or whatever, they will, if forced to answer about the loss of life on January 6th, you know, they would probably say that sucks. You know, that was not something that should have happened.
To the Fox News thing, I feel like I just read recently that if you in homes where they normally watched Fox News, if you took that away, that people would then kind of like need a news fix. And so would go possibly to CNN or someplace else. And their views will change a little bit because they're literally just sponges just taking in whatever, you know. So they're like, oh, well, I never heard about this thing or that thing. So it might be informative if there's some way we can accidentally like trip over the plug for Fox News for all of the providers.
Right.
But I am still kind of caught on the idea of bringing in producers to make this like more watchable, because politicians are not inherently watchable. I mean, you can watch them if you're interested, but they're not necessarily watchable if you're not interested. And if they are trying, it's even more painful. So I don't know if they may end up turning people off by trying to get folks in with some razzle dazzle.
And I don't know. I mean, look, I don't want to overstate the razzle dazzle.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, even razzle dazzle for Washington is just like, you know, a choice of who the talking heads are to report on, you know.
And in general, there is always some measure of producing going on with these things, right. No matter who's in control, right? Because there's a national audience, there's an international audience. Like, the thing has to kind of look and be coherent and have an order and a strategy.
Sure.
I mean, you know, so I don't want to, like, undermine, you know,
no, the actual
that everybody does
job
that.
That's done.
Yeah.
But I feel like any sort of tweak, you know, just any little tweak, it will be very noticeable. And we already know who of our particular politicians like gravitate towards the camera.
It's a little like Steven Soderbergh when he did the Oscars. Everyone was like, I mean.
I actually liked that Oscars.
You like that Oscars?
I did.
You're very, there's not many of you.
Yeah, no, I thought it
I didn't hate it.
I thought it was
like, this is fine.
A watchable hot mess.
Well, okay, there you go.
It was
there
a watchable hot mess.
Yeah,
it was
very
awkward.
Yeah.
Its awkwardness was almost endearing, which I don't know if I will be able to say the same thing.
Oh, it was just, you know, it was in a train station.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they need to do with the committee hearings is move them to a train station.
No, absolutely. Put them somewhere uncomfortable.
Fresh.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, to speak to your other point, Nagin, like, do I think collectively we agree that the loss of life was sad? I sure hope so, yes. But whether we agree about who caused the loss of life,
right.
That's a different story. Yeah. And that's a place where if these, you know, if by some miracle, I'm not super optimistic this will happen, but if this becomes must-see TV in any way that it can, then if nothing else, the magic of that, the benefit of it for the country would be that we all understand that this was not Antifa, right?
That would be nice
to collectively agree on. Right, that alone would be powerful.
Let's check in on another political thing happening. It was primary day in California, and a couple of interesting results came out. First, they recalled a very progressive prosecutor, Chesa Boudin, was recalled in a landslide in San Francisco. And then the Republican-turned-Democrat Rick Caruso, who campaigned on a crime-fighting message in Los Angeles, is now going into a runoff in the mayoral primary, which, you know, expected, unexpected. Weird. I guess both of these things are signaling a little bit of a change of form in California, because it's long been the most progressive state in the union. But voters seem to be fed up about progressive policies, particularly with respect to crime. Were you surprised by these results?
Not really. No one feels like being progressive right now. I don't think I don't think anyone understands what that means. And because anything in a progressive movement tends to move in fits and starts. There's never just like a overall change that, you know, there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of thought. There's a lot of nuance. And I don't think that's what people are in the mood for. So I think people will always react. Look here, man. Top Gun Maverick is the highest grossing movie since the talkies or some craziness like we ain't in the mood for nuance and trying to figure out ways to work things out and clearly looking ahead. You know, Kate Bush
has
a number one song, so yeah,
like I'm you know, I also get it, because I too have thought more about when am I going to see Top Gun Maverick, which I still haven't done, but I want to have that movie going experience with the popcorn and the ridiculousness and the, you know, the loudspeakers and because that's fun and I've earned it. You know what I mean?
Right.
As a citizen,
right.
I deserve to have a good time and that's fine. You know what I mean? But Danielle, what you were going to say.
Well, I have a lot of sort of mixed feelings about what's just happened in California. I want to say for the record, I've never lived in California. I know very little about local California politics. But when this happened, I did reach out to a bunch of my friends who live in both San Francisco and LA. And, you know, what I really have come to is that this guy's wonderful progressive stance on policing, which is to not criminalize poverty. That's basically where he's coming from, which I 100% agree with. he's doing that in a vacuum without other structural changes, right? Mm. So when you're trying to not criminalize poverty, which I think is a wonderful approach to that job, but you're not able across the city or across the state to include more housing, mental health care, and drug abuse help for the homeless population, which in California is just enormous. We're talking about both one of the most progressive, but also one of the most unequal states in the union. You know, that is where it seems to me the problem lies. It's really hard structurally to change everything I just listed, to create affordable housing, health care, mental health access, job opportunities for tens of thousands of homeless people who are living in California. Without those shifts, if you also then relax some of the sort of normal policies around policing, what's going to happen is petty crime is going to rise because those people—
It can't be a one-sided approach.
That's
it. It has to be a 360-degree approach.
Right.
And that's the problem is that we don't have the like statewide will in California or the national will to have that kind of approach.
Correct.
Because it requires a ton of public resources.
Right. And so then when Republican mega donors say, this guy's the problem— he's the reason why there are more break-ins in your neighborhood. He's the reason why there are more assaults. It's a very easy call, right? Because a voter can say, oh, good, I don't like that stuff, so I'm going to vote this guy out.
And also, by the way, like that's what also got us the mayoralty of Eric Adams here in New York City.
Yep. Correct.
You know, was this tough on crime? Here's the thing I would love to see from like a progressive discourse around the idea that being tough on crime or just like not allow, you know, being like, no, this is a criminal act and I shan't allow it, right? Whatever you want to call that, the shan't allowing of
crime. I want to call it Shakespeare that you shan't allow it.
That being tough on crime doesn't have to be antithetical to fair sentencing and restorative justice, right? Like we have to figure out the like language around this because that's what it's become. It's like, let everybody roam free or, you know, so that you can have fair sentencing, which is not what's going on and what shouldn't go on. And in some cases, I have to be honest with you guys, like in New York City, there was a definitive shift when the pandemic started and especially after, George Floyd, that there was a definitive shift in what police were doing and not doing in my neighborhood. Like, I can't pretend that I didn't see that, right? Like, I did see that. That was happening. Mm-hmm. And that has been frustrating for a lot of residents in New York City. Like, there were quality of life things that we used to, like, fine and do stuff like that, and that they're not doing that anymore, right? So then a lot of, like, there's more, you know, graffiti. There's more tents put up in places where there shouldn't be, you know? Like, that kind of stuff just wasn't happening before. Obviously, like, nobody wants to live around a lot of these things, you know, that nobody, and again, I don't live in California anymore, but like I had a friend who had to just move because of the homeless problem in his neighborhood. He had a house that he put his, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into like hand renovating, and he had to sell it and leave because he couldn't take it anymore. I mean, that's real. And so what do you say to those people? And this is, by the way, a gay man who was just like, a hard and fast progressive forever, but also wants the issues dealt with. So it's like, we got to figure that out on the left, the conversation.
Part of the issue, right, is that the left and the right have very different narratives about what causes crime. Do you guys remember when that guy, that jerk called AOC a fucking bitch on the Capitol?
Yeah.
Does anyone remember this?
Yeah.
Right? Do you remember what she said to cause that comment?
I don't.
She said the reason crime rises is because people are poor and desperate. And he found that so offensive that it seemed appropriate to him to call her a fucking bitch publicly. You know, if you feel, as right. I feel, that crime is absolutely directly tethered to poverty and lack of opportunity, then how you're going to approach crime is about solving those issues. If you feel that crime is about bad guys who can't be helped, more of the right-wing perspective, then you're going to come in guns blazing like a sheriff cartoon man, right? So part of the issue here is we fundamentally disagree about what causes crime to rise in this country.
And I would also be remiss if I didn't say there's an element of social media and news media that is driving the crime conversation. Because, you know, for example, the, like, you know, there's this whole, like, don't take the New York City subways, or there was a couple months ago, whatever. But actually, the crime in subways has not increased so minimally as to be statistically insignificant.
That's right.
The number of murders in 2010, for example, was 536. And in 2021, that number is 488. It is actually lower than in 2010, when we weren't thinking about crime in the same way. Mm-hmm. I lived here in 2010, and we didn't talk about it as much as we talk about it now, right? So, and also, like, if you look at other types of crime, it's either very similar or slightly lower or just slightly higher. So you, when you're looking at, like, at the actual science, it doesn't track with the media narrative, and it doesn't track with my mom calling me and being like, I heard there's, you can't take the subway anymore. I'm like, what are you talking about? As you know, as someone who takes the subway nearly every day. So, you know, it's, these are the other things that we have to reckon with, is narratives driving things rather than actual facts. And so that's the other problem. All right, folks, I didn't mean to be the end of the conversation there, but we have to move on. Let's hear quickly about our sponsors. And when we come back, we will move on to topic number two.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things, and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to, like, go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a, like, a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So, like, for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two, and it is with great ambivalence that I bring you a segment on the Depp Heard trial. I don't need to do much preamble here because everyone heard about it. It trended every single day for like 6 weeks. It had some kind of coverage on literally every outlet I ever did see. In brief, Depp sued Heard for defamation over an op-ed she wrote in 2018 in the Washington Post that did not name him. I feel like that's a really critical aspect of this. She countersued. There was a lot of salacious and harrowing details of the relationship that sounded, you know, like an just a not good relationship also. And the jury handed down a pro Depp, like a little bit of a mixed verdict. Depp is to be awarded $15 million, but Heard is to be awarded $2 million. It's this kind of, so I guess my big question is, does this kind of trial say something large about society, or is it just like a slap on the Oscar stage? You know, where is it? What are the ripples? Are there ripples?
I don't know. I managed to not know any details outside of the very basic thing. I clicked on nothing. I watched
that was me
nothing,
for many weeks. Yes.
And so I truly am like, huh, what happened now? And so, so the only thing I can track
for the listeners out there, they did receive an article to read in which they could
catch up.
That's right.
Catch up. But here's
because
what...
I said nearly every episode, like, I'm not following this case. Because I didn't follow the 6 weeks. So I kind of, it's actually kind of an interesting position to be in because I did it. I wasn't in on the everyday. Right. Now I could just look at it as like, this is a thing that happened. So what does it mean?
What stood out as someone who was not getting into the nuts and bolts of it was noticing the reactions to things happening. And so perhaps, I don't know what this means for relations. I saw people reacting by saying, well, that's the end of Me Too. No, it's not. And also I saw someone, like maybe two other celebrities having a back and forth, and a lot of people mentioning, oh, someone's about to get depped. Nope, that's not, completely different situation. These aren't two celebrities who were dating. Mm-hmm. This is a business dispute that we are reading about. No one is about to get depped. So clearly a lot of people watched and had no idea what was happening, what the stakes were, all of that.
Right.
I was struck by the willingness people had to jump in and root for their home team.
Mm.
To find out that like that was more of a cahoots thing. You know what I mean? That was a concentrated effort to
you mean like the pro Depp content?
Yeah, pro Depp. Yeah. Like I was just like, this is wild. Who cares about Johnny Depp like this?
Yes!
And I'm speaking as someone who had a picture of Johnny Depp in her high school locker. Granted, I graduated high school in 1990, so we're talking, you know, 21 Jump Street Depp. But I was just like, wow, who has really thought about him enough to do all of this? It was like at Chris Brown levels of wackiness. And that is that is a level of stan of wackiness that I truly am like, what is happening? How are you spending all of this time doing this?
Now, I said this, so shout out to my coffee crew buddies, Jessica and Brent, who basically sent me all of the research for this and like gave me their hot takes. And one of my questions to them was the same thing. Like, is Johnny Depp like a part of the American popular imagination in ways that I totally didn't understand?
Right.
And they were like, Pirates of the Caribbean is huge.
It's the Jack Sparrow
thing. And so that's something
thing.
I maybe really don't understand, is that how big Pirates of the Caribbean was, but also there could have just been bots.
Yeah, there could have been. There could have been, but I guess Pirates of the Caribbean was very big, but so would people ride for anyone who was a superhero in a superhero movie in that way?
Yeah.
That's what I'm like, will the bots come out if something happens with Robert Downey Jr.? Because how dare you talk about our Iron Man like this? Do you know what I mean? Like, is this...
I, I, I think that's possible. I mean, listen, what this, I didn't follow the trial closely either because I, you know, I want to be happy. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed in the little bit that I caught was that the vitriol against this woman, you know, classically, right?
Right.
The culture likes a perfect victim. A perfect victim means she's got a very pleasing personality. She never did anything nuts. She doesn't have any substance issues. She's not only articulate but believable. You know, the heights you would have to reach as a public victim at this level to garner sympathy for having been physically and emotionally abused is impossible. Meanwhile, the little bit, like the little bit of this that I caught was Johnny Depp on the stand. This is the only video I watched, people, reading texts between himself and Paul Bettany, is that his name? The other famous actor.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Where they are casually joking about raping and killing this woman.
Oh.
And the public response to that when Depp is on the stand is, that lovable scamp. this guy.
Look.
Meanwhile, she gets, violent pushback. I'm not saying either of these people are someone I would advise dating. Mm-mm. But that has nothing to do with whether or not she was victimized. It seems very clear that she was, not only from the evidence, but also from the fact that she won this case in the United Kingdom.
Right, it was already decided. We already know.
Correct.
We knew what's what.
Right. But she proved over and over again the abuse.
Yes.
And it was like that part's out of control. The New Yorker did a really great roundup of this and said and wrote one sentence, which I think kind of encapsulates the entire thing, which was about the op-ed and everything that ensued. They wrote what was intended as a Me Too testimonial about women being punished for naming their experiences became a Me Too instrument for punishing a woman who named her experiences.
Correct.
Right. And so I think the incredible thing is she didn't just name her experiences. She then proved it over and over in two countries. The judicial system of one country saw fit, you know, agreed and like saw the evidence. Here, one of the craziest things that happened is that the judge decided the jury didn't need to be sequestered.
Yeah, that's wild.
And that the thing needed to be televised. Which,
yeah, why?
Talk to any lawyer, and that's the thing that is the most baffling to them. Because all of the stuff that was taking over all of media for almost 2 months was also in the ears of the jury.
Yeah, which must be why they were going so hard. Because I am online too much. And this really did, all of this support for Johnny Depp really did feel like it came out of nowhere. Because he's not someone where if you had said his name, 10 years ago on the apps, people would have been like,
no one would.
He's
not like Tom Hanks.
Yeah,
he's not
someone who has drawn out this kind of emotion, even with all of his success
credits
and whatever. So that's why it was so baffling to me. And then when I found out that the jury wasn't sequestered, I was like, oh, this was for their benefit. This was for them.
Guys, I don't know if I totally agree about the Johnny Depp piece. I think maybe we're just the wrong Zoom chat, you know, for Johnny Depp standing. But I'm guessing here because my Johnny Depp is also 21 Jump Street. So thank you, Shalala, for that. But I think if you grew up, what are there, like 45 of those movies where he's Jack Sparrow?
Yeah,
I think if you grew up with those movies as kind of a central kind of media component of your childhood, he might have a kind of almost mystical, central place in your imagination that just isn't true necessarily for us. But I do have to say just quickly, you know, the fun thing about patriarchy is that it enjoys female suffering in so many ways. It likes to really get in there.
It's really innovated on that front.
The diversity of female suffering that it enjoys is incredible. And I thought by having it televised, it not only was to create a sort of robust sexist movement against this woman, it was also to be titillated and to be given pleasure by watching her suffer live. Yeah, that's part of what this was, which is repugnant. You know, so I'd say to the few really open, confident sexists who listen to this program, don't worry.
I have so many listeners.
You're doing great. Patriarchy is alive and well. I don't think this kills me too, hopefully, but I do think it really points out how vehement and consistent we have to be in understanding and proclaiming that women don't have to be perfect victims to be victimized, and that their stories still matter. This is definitely a hit when it comes to that narrative.
Yeah, and also I just want to point out too, one of the other weird legal things is that they tried the case in Virginia that has kind of lesser anti-slap laws is what they're called, which are the laws that kind of make it okay for women to come forward. There's like greater protections in California where they really did want to try the case.
Right.
But again, Depp's lawyer, I mean, I'll give them that. They were good. You know what I mean? They were not necessarily on the right side, but they were good at their job. So, so there are states, I guess, if you do find yourself being victimized, hopefully it's in a state with better anti-slap laws. Oh, it's so sad. But I am curious. I think the other thing that I'm also reminded of in moments like this is that most of the people who need these kinds of protections as women are not celebrities. And yes, part of this is just like having a conversation about the rarefied class of people that have so much money they can throw around on cases like this. Whereas for the average person, this is not, you know, they need the same, they need to be able to like fight for justice, and they can't even get in the arena in the first place because of money. So, you know, also just like something to remember. All right, let us move on to topic number three. I'm going to butcher this name, but Thenmuzi Soundarajan, the founder and executive director of Equality Labs, which is a nonprofit that advocates for Dalits, or who are members of the lowest ranked caste in India, was supposed to speak at Google for the Dalit History Month. But before she came to speak, the Google internet was flooded with false accusations that she's anti-Hindu. And then that talk was canceled. First of all, like, I just reading this piece, did it, I've heard of the caste system in India, and the hierarchies that it's created, but it hadn't occurred to me that it had entered Google, you know what I mean? But of course, India is one of their biggest markets. So, Danielle, you're the one who kind of brought this story to me. What first interested you about this piece and about this incident?
Well, you know, I guess, bizarrely enough, when I was reading about this, I was thinking a lot about my grandma Betty and my grandpa Milton of blessed memory. She was, of course, obviously, she was from Russia and his family was Hungarian. And at the time in America, between different Jewish factions, Hungarian Jews perceived themselves as above Russian Jews. So when they got married, my grandparents, family lore disagrees, like, did my grandpa Milton's parents actually sit Shiva, which is what you do when someone dies, or did they threaten to sit Shiva? Either way, there was a profoundly violent negative response to these two different types of Jews marrying, and obviously this is two generations back. Today, in that same family structure, if a Jewish young person got married to someone who even just said, I'm okay with Jews, that family might throw a parade. So it's an interesting example for me, this story about how when a tribe, you know, immigrates to America, which bigotries and confusions persist and which bigotries and confusions kind of get dulled out over time in that tribe. And, you know, I'm no expert on the caste system. I've just Googled it a couple times, but it's clearly a bigoted, unfair, randomly unjust system. And so the idea that it's infiltrated Google as Hindu nationalism rises in India just pointed out to me like this fascinating tension about what it means to have tribal identity in America when you still have a tether to the place you came from, right? And these are the kinds of appalling results that can sometimes happen. You know, Google shut this talk down because right-wing Hindu folks at Google said were offended. In fact, if you read the article, Nagin, partly why I sent it to you, is they said having this woman come to simply talk about the fact that Dalits, also known as the untouchables, right, don't get the opportunities that they deserve, aren't represented as they should be, the people, right-wing Hindu folks at Google said, having this woman come is a threat to our physical safety.
Mm.
That's insane, right? But it speaks to how strong that tether is to sort of ancient, older bigotries that their families are connected to. I think any tribal group in the States that came here voluntarily has some relationship to that. I mean, Nagin, as an Iranian American, like, does any of that speak to you, the tensions that I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's also funny because you leave Iran, you come to the United States, and it takes, as in the case of your grandparents, a couple of generations for those divisions to sort of be forgotten. And if we're talking about, like, newer immigrants, those divisions haven't been forgotten, so then they become replicated in Silicon Valley companies, which was, like, the kind of odd thing that this article points out that's happening. And then I think so that meets the American way, which is really awesome that we always talk about it, right? You can say whatever you want. Americans do talk about these divisions, and they are way more open about their opinions. And so it's like it's a culture clash, right? Mm. But like happening at a Google office. And so I think that's really interesting. And then the other thing that I thought was really kind of funny about this story is that the person who made the final decision for this woman, Soundararajan, not to come speak, was Kathy Edwards, who's the VP of engineering and has no expertise on the caste system. Now,
right.
Look, when we're talking about Kathy, I would say most VPs of engineering are not going to have expertise on the caste system. So part of me also sympathizes with Kathy because she's like, oh God, I'm being told this person is anti-Hindu, but I literally have no idea. And like, my name is Kathy. That should say a lot about what I do and do not know about the caste divisions in India, right?
Nagin, I was hoping that you were going to say most Kathys. That's what I hoped.
And I will go ahead and say most Kathys. Okay. Come at me, Kathys. But, it's the other crazy thing, and this just kind of speaks to what is the responsibility of companies in understanding like what's going on socially when what they're really doing is widgets, right? When their expertise is in widgets. And this is a really critical question right now because of abortion rights.
Right.
Because of trans rights, companies have to take on these positions. We saw what happened with Disney. And here's an example that I think is maybe a little bit clearer for Americans, that someone named Kathy had to decide about a speaker for Dalit History Month and not understanding what was going on, because why would she? I mean, you know? So I don't know. What do you think? It's not that Fortune 500 companies need my sympathy. They're like doing great. But I do picture myself like being Kathy and just being like, oh my God, there's this controversy over a speaker, like, and just crying at her desk. You know what I mean? Because she doesn't know what to do.
To me, it honestly just kind of harkened back to the 2 years ago when there was a boom time for diversity training in mm-hmm. companies. And someone who was the diversity, capital T, the capital D diversity in an office, and having to watch people go through training that they don't maybe think they need, or they don't understand why this is happening, and then someone having a problem with it, and the people in charge who said we have to do it or are confused as to why this is kicked over everything, and the diversity is just standing to the side like, wow, y'all seem to be having a real hard time here. Like it's actually kind of painful to watch people argue about whether or not you and your situation is worth discussing, and for people to have a strong opinion as to why it's not. And to you still having to be on that Zoom call while that's happening. And then to have someone who's just like, I don't know, man, we just, you know, we saw the news. We thought this was a thing we're supposed to do. Kathy, just go on to make a call. And Kathy being like, I guess just squash it. Like, no one can get along.
Right.
You know, I'm going to take my diverse ball and go home. And that's just, that is, it is kind of funny to watch, but it's also in the quieter moments as the diversity really painful. And I can't, I mean, I can kind of imagine what that's like to, because I'm sure Kathy was just like, oh, I didn't even know there was a situation. I didn't know there were different levels to this. I just thought they were all Indian. So, you know, like to be lumped and then to say, oh, there are differences. Okay, let's figure out the differences. And then to have one lump argue about the other lump finding out, like it's just, there are worms everywhere. Cans of worms have been open everywhere, and nobody wants to deal with the worms, and everyone just wants to cancel the program. And the people that hurt the most are the people who you're supposed to be speaking for. It just really, it stinks in that regard. I can speak from personal recent experience. That stinks.
And I can also say, like, the other thing that feels like stinks about this is that it, you know, the Sundar Rajan also pointed out that Google was able to make like really passionate statements about George Floyd, and that they should quote be, you know, absolutely making those same commitments in this context, right? And that makes a lot of sense, but it's that's correct.
Yeah.
But you know, here's why,
you're talking about people who are like, it's like Kathy, and she's just like, I don't know, cancel it, you know. And it's like something, no one's oppression is worse or better or whatever.
Right.
It gets back into this like oppression Olympics shit that sucks.
Yes.
And
makes me sad for people. Listen, if Kathy's listening, Nagin, I'm sure she's deeply grateful for your compassion. But let me push against that a touch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the man directly under Kathy, the guy who we see at all the congressional hearings when Google is there, is Indian, and he is from the highest caste.
Right.
He is a Brahmin.
Right.
So,
which plays into the story.
Correct. So, like, this is not an abstraction.
To him
right. or to the leadership team of Google.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if Kathy didn't know many people at Google who are Indian or know many people from different castes, but that's simply not the case. I don't know Kathy. I'm sure I wish her the best. But the chances that she has no understanding.
Don't never count out people's ability and willingness to just not know. Like,
not
never
count. Yeah.
That's one thing I've learned from my diversity training is people's ability to not, like, take that in and take the lesson, even if it's all around them. If they don't have to, if they really don't have to in order to live, trust me, they won't.
I believe you, and I also totally make sense, and it's an amazing point. And I also think in this case, she has to open her eyes.
Yeah.
This is happening at her company.
Yeah.
It's her responsibility. And I don't work at Google. I don't have insider info for what's happening there. I wish I had Google gossip. How exciting. I don't. but it does seem a little interesting to me that this decision is placed in her lap, white, not Indian Kathy, and not in the lap of the man directly beneath her, who is a Brahmin. And who fully understands these dynamics. You know, often in these kinds of corporate settings, that's how decision-making happens so that difficult conversations don't have to occur. That's a problem. This should be faced. You know, one of the things in the article that really sort of struck me was the speaker who wasn't allowed to come said, this is, you know, Google puts out a statement and says, of course we're against caste, you know, people being chosen for their caste here at Google. But the reason why we wouldn't let her speak is because it was her speaking was causing so much division and rancor. And as I was reading that in this article, I thought, when does someone showing up and saying, I'm from the group who doesn't get what they deserve and need, when is that met without some division and rancor?
Yeah, no one's trying to hear
right,
from that.
That's how it works.
That's the reason why they need to come speak in the first
correct.
Place.
Correct.
Right.
If we're only going to have people come and say things that make us all feel just
then,
great.
Then it's just Oprah at every event.
Right. Or I guess a cooking class who doesn't love a cupcake.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, if Google's going to come out and say, we're a progressive company, we care about these issues, you actually have to then invite the person whose community is being negatively impacted to share their experience.
I guess the other thing I would say, where finger waggingly at Kathy.
Let's do it.
Is, you know, you're Google. You have the resources to figure it out. If you feel like you can't figure it out, you could bring together an independent committee and do it. Like, you can do it. You have resources. So I guess, you know, when it comes to social responsibility and on these types of issues and the Fortune 500, I'm going to go ahead and say you guys are real rich. Mm-hmm. Put together some people who understand the ethics, and let's get it done properly.
Correct.
You know, so it's not like Kathy doesn't have to do all the deciding when she doesn't know what's going on. So there we go.
Also, you know, Nagin, not my place and totally inappropriate, but Kathy, if you want to come on this show and really tell us what you think, why you made the decisions you did, how you feel about being named Kathy, we're here.
Hey, I have a really good friend named Kathy. I love
There's some great Kathys out there.
There's some great Kathys. Hashtag not all Kathys. Okay. All right, folks, that is the end of the show. As predicted, the two of you are just utterly delightful panelists. What a departure from just all the garbage panelists I've had on over the years. No, I really wanted the people of Fake the Nation to follow you and all the wonderful work that you do. Danielle, where do they do that?
You can find me on Instagram. It's at ddurch, which is D-D-U-R-C-H, or on my website, DanielleDurchlag.com.
Absolutely do that. She is wonderful. And Shalewa, mm-hmm. Where do people find you?
Oh, I'm on all of the social medias at Silky Jumbo, all one word, traditional spelling. And my website is Shalewa Sharp. That's S-H-A-L-E-W-A-S-H-A-R-P-E .com.
Yeah, you'll have opportunities to see Shalewa do stand-up, which everyone should be doing. And you'll have opportunities to see Danielle's films as they come out and do screenings around the country at various festivals. So this is why you need to be following these people. And as for me, folks, you know I'm going to be in Salt Lake and in Denver the weekend of June 24th. With the Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour. So definitely check out your listings. Is that what people do? Check out your listings, whatever that means, to see. And by listings, I think maybe I mean NagineFarsad.com, and you can see where I'll be performing. Hope to see you in the wild with the Wait, Don't Tell Me crew. And theoretically, I will also be doing Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend, the regular show. So tune in to that. All right, folks. What I would really like to do is thank everyone who made this show possible. We are producerless this week, which leaves a heavier burden on our wonderful sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar. And special thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making this show a possibility. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music. And special thanks to Wayne Cohen at Stand Up Sound for hosting us this week. We will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.